until we saw the clip in '90. It was 5 years after I'd been at Aberdeen, and by that time I was kind of established in the first team. Wally had resigned. Wally had retired. Wally Miller had retired. So I got in alongside Alec McLeish as a sort of regular centre half at Aberdeen at the time, and I think it's a great reward for the patience and perseverance in my own mind, anyway, for sticking with Aberdeen. Because if I'd went to that team in Charlton that I had the chance to go to, I was told by the manager at the time in Charlton that I would play in the first team right away. I probably wasn't ready for the first team at any level professionally, but he was going to put me in the first team. And I knew at Aberdeen that wasn't the case. It was a slow week, season after season. It took, as I say, 5 years to get to that season when we got to the cup final and won the cup. So what a reward that was for that 5 years of persevering, putting up with the disappointment of being in the reserves or being dropped, or not so much dropped, but just not getting picked, because obviously Alec and Willie were the regular first team picked. So those disappointments were all kind of good character building for you. And as I say, I got a great reward in that season, 89-90, with the cup final, when you got the shootout looks great and you're the hero hitting the winning penalty, but it was 9-8. That was the 20th penalty. So it was sudden death. There'd been a lot of penalties taken. If you do your maths, there's 22 players in a team, so you've only got, and plus that includes the two goalkeepers. So that's 20 outfield players, and I've hit the 20th penalty. So I'm a hero. If I didn't go into that detail, you might think, oh yeah, you were the hero, but I was actually a reluctant hero because I wasn't very confident hitting penalties, and that's why I was down the line. But the circumstances just came the way they came, and you went forward. No real pressure in a way, even though there's 65,000 people at Hampden, and you know it's an important game in the Scottish Cup final. But I went forward to hit the winner, whereas the four or five Aberdeen players before me were having to score to keep us in the game, because Celtic always were before us, and they were scoring. And at sudden death, if you'd missed, Celtic would have won it. So the pressure was really on the guys before. And then, as we saw in the video there, I just saw myself for the first time for a while, because I don't really sit at home and watch that video, obviously. And it still gives me goosebumps to see it wherever I watch it or wherever I get shown it. But when I went forward after the Celtic player had missed, after a great save from Theo, it was to score the winner, if I could score. And thankfully I did, and it was into the Aberdeen end as well. So, you know, that was a fantastic feeling. That was probably the highlight of my Aberdeen career. And it ended up 12 years, I say, with Aberdeen before I played with Dundee and then Ross County in the Highlands towards the end of my career.
Great. That's fantastic. That was 27 years ago, wasn't it? That's the last time that we won the Scottish Cup. I'm not going to say, but, you know, where's my faith? Okay, another question. During your playing career, you were diagnosed with MS. Did that force you to retire early from football, or do you think it might draw you to being a football manager or something like that? How did you feel? Because your career was there, you're obviously very fit and everything else. How did that really feel for you? It must have been devastating.
The diagnosis with MS was not really a footballing issue. It was a kind of put things into perspective. I spoke about the disappointments of leading up to 1990, and that was basic kind of footballing things and just determination to win your place in the team and try and get your place in the team and put any disappointment of being dropped or left out the team behind you and show the right character. All character building things that I think are important. And football's full of ups and downs. You know, it looks glamorous. It looks like a good career, and it is a great career, without a doubt. I'm very fortunate to have been a footballer for such a long time. I was 21 years a professional footballer, from 83 right through to 2003, when I retired at Ross County. But it's a lot of things that within football, just like anybody in any walk of life, you have to learn about life. Obviously, most of it involves football, but I think the MS diagnosis brought things into a different level, if you like. And when I was diagnosed with MS, things had actually been a good time. was doing quite well in the football again. It was 1985. The team had a terrible season that year, but I'd been not really playing that year with injury and whatnot. But came back into the team and had played quite a good part in helping the team stay up and avoid Aberdeen being relegated in 1985. So we finished the season not having won anything, but almost like winning a cup, because we'd survive relegation and eventually finished in a playoff down at Dunfermline. So you finished that season in a high, and then the season was over, and you usually, not so much now, but you used to get a good break in the summer as a footballer, but it seems to be pretty short now, the break. You're looking forward to your summer break, but I had a strange feeling in my legs, tingling feeling. I went to my doctor, and with football, you're always getting kind of ahead of the game with any medical help. You were always away to a doctor or away to check up on a specialist. If you sneeze or something, you know, you're kind of spoiled as a footballer. So it was always going ahead of probably the normal person in the street with the issues I had. But I went to the doctor. Before I knew I was in hospital, and before I even knew further, I was actually in Forrester Hill getting intravenous steroid things put into me. The doctor explained there was an inflammation in my central nervous system. I didn't really know what that meant. And so I was getting this put in each day. And then he came round after about 6 days saying, we'll just see how this works, but I have to let you know my diagnosis for you is the MS. And that was like a thunderbolt. You know, that's one of those things. I didn't know anything about MS. You know, it's just a horrible label, and the connotation could have been, it wasn't a positive outlook. You know, the prognosis isn't particularly positive. It's totally different for everyone, I think, with the condition. But generally, if you're told something like that, you fear the worst. And so that was how I was feeling that time. And I remember being in the Forrester Hill bed that night, just thinking, again, a perspective situation in life where you think, you know, if that Scottish Cup final, the medal I got for that Scottish Cup final, if you put that in the bed beside me, or Scottish caps, I was fortunate to win Scotland caps 9 times for Scotland. I played so far, I've played 9 times. Because I'd love to have played 10, but anyway, 9 was enough. But, you know, if you put them in the bed beside me, or any material benefits that football had brought you, the caps and things like that, and said, right, that'll make Brian feel better. That'll make me feel better. Now, you would think to yourself, no, it doesn't. And obviously it didn't. It wouldn't have helped if I'd done such a thing. And the only thing that was going to help me in this situation, we haven't really touched on it, was by this point I'm a Christian. And so the fact that something bad was happening was not good. But Romans 8:28 says, in all things God works for good. So that verse had kept coming. It's actually my favourite verse. I mentioned about a verse and I'll probably bring it up later. But that was the verse that was always coming on to me at that time. In all things God works together for good for those who love him. And it was not a good thing or a good moment at that point in my life. And it just something to cling on to, something, an anchor to give you some stability in a horrible situation. So the Bible verses, prayer, praying to God, not really big, long, complicated prayers like, Lord, help, you know, two words. You know, just being able to speak to God, communicate with God, that helped. And obviously communicating on our level with other Christians, other believers coming in and who'd heard the news, not that day, but in the subsequent days, coming in and just giving you support. Now that made a difference. So you see, that's how the perspective for me came, that this is the important things in life, not the things we strive after, whether you're a footballer, whatever you do, or whatever what you end up doing. These are not the important things in life. The important things in life, your relationship with God, and your relationship with other people. These are the key things, and that's the way I find it clear in my mind now, having gone through this experience, and been shown clearly the importance of relationships as opposed to material things and things we strive after, thinking they're the important things.
Thank you for being so honest. One thing I wanted to ask was about your family. I mean, did they stay in Aberdeen? Tell us a little bit about your family.
Yeah, I'm married to my wife Donna. We've been married 29 years. We've got two daughters, Hannah, who's 27, just at the time of the cup final, the oldest daughter was born, and then my youngest daughter, Tina, she's 23. So, grown-up family, who live in Inverness. I live in Inverness, but I work in Aberdeen, so it's a bit complicated just now, but that's been, we've all got our stories of how life works, and at the moment, it's a little bit awkward to work in Aberdeen but live in Inverness. I don't commute every day. I work as a police officer at the moment, and so I'll commute down at the start of a shift, and when the shift's finished, I'll go back in the train to Inverness and spend the days off at home and then come back for the next set of shifts. So that's my current situation. But over the years, when I retired from playing, one of the different experiences I've been able to do is some coaching opportunities, and there was America and Cleveland in the northeast and Carolina in the southeast, and then the connection I had there was a Scotsman, a Christian Scotsman, and he took me over there. But my family were always here, so we've been, over the years, we have been a lot of times, we've been split up through work, and it's one of these things you've got to deal with in the best way possible. For example, one of the American ones, after the Carolina opportunity, I said to the manager at the time in the Carolina team that was helping him with, no, this is just too much, being away from home so much. So I then make my way back to Scotland to carry on working back here, and whatever it was, youth work I was involved with at the time about 10 years ago. And just as I do that, he's been doing well, and we've been doing well as in the team in Carolina. He then gets the opportunity to be the head coach at Vancouver Whitecaps in the east, the west side of America, although it's Canada, obviously Vancouver. So he gets a job there, but I've already gone back to Scotland. So you've kind of missed, you maybe just, I don't know how life would have meant there, but I could have been with him in that. But we kept the connection up. So although I wasn't his assistant in Vancouver Whitecaps, which was quite a lucrative and quite an exciting job when I went over to visit him a couple of times, we kept the connection up. So he always kept friends with me. And so then he, after his 2 years at Vancouver were up, he got a chance. He never got his contract renewed at Vancouver. So like any football manager, you're sitting around waiting for the next job to come in. His next job came in Korea, which is on in the news just now, obviously the north. This was in the south. And he asked, the guy that was assisting him in Vancouver wasn't so keen to go to Korea. As you see the news just now, you can understand why. But the team was based in Seoul. So Martin asked me, not to be employed by the team, but to go out and help him as a kind of consultant and just give him some help with coaching and training and picking the team and scouting and going around the Korea looking at other teams. And I agreed to do that as a kind of, so it's almost like a gap year I took. So I went off to do that in 2015. Good experiences, but you know, I don't know if it was a wise thing to do. But some great experiences in South Korea and Seoul and all over Korea. And that's basically my last throw of the dice. So that's where I'll put the ball down, I think. Because that's where the football ended in 2015. And from there, I came back and got back involved with a youth job or a charity job I was doing in Inverness. And then started to apply for the police. And I've been a year in the police now. So that's a kind of full story up right up to date. That's why it's a ball down.
The ball's down. That's fine. Just one other question then. I mean, that was one of the things that you touched on, Romans 8:28. It was really when you go through all these struggles, you've had the highs and lows of football, you've had the struggle with an illness, you've had your family growing up and everything else, and you know, having to go into different places, now the police. What do you think God's leading you towards, or where do you see, you've obviously had great opportunities to share your faith with so many people because of your football career, and young people nowadays seem to be pushed in certain ways with what they think football is all about. What advice would you give them? Because you were a public figure in a very different world than perhaps where we are now with the crazy sums of football and everything else. What advice would you give to people nowadays?
Yeah, I was in a different generation because I don't think I'd be applying for the police if I was a footballer today in an English Premiership. Certainly wouldn't have maybe had been a wise thing to turn down Charlton if they were in the Premier League today, you know, when you read about monopoly money that the players there are paid. So it's just, it was a different generation. I was in a time 20-30 years ago, and that was the time, and I just always looked to glorify God. That sounds quite, what do you mean by that? But put God first and just trust God. And that's a key word as well, trust God. Sometimes I can't trace God or understand how the Lord's working things out in my life. But the important thing for you and for me is just to trust God. And that's what some people would say about taking up a call, taking up, you know, this call to follow God, where it doesn't really make sense on a human level, totally. And equally, it's wrong if you're saying, I'm trusting God, and it's kind of going against what the Bible says or what other Christians are telling you. So I think really if you're, you know, it's, you've got to be sure you're right following a call. And whether it was my football career, I had just become a Christian before I joined Aberdeen. And I felt that was, this was the next step. And so right from the beginning of my football career, I was able to give it all the glory to God. And that's why I used to share my faith publicly at quite big meetings, churches all over the country. Billy Graham came over in 91, and there was, I remember a meeting down in Parkhead, 30,000 at Celtic Park. The Aberdeen here, there was 15,000 at Pittodrie, I think over three nights each, full 15,000. And I shared them one night, I shared my faith one of the nights. What a privilege that was, to share your faith on a football park. That was helping me just realise, oh, I think God's, or I believe God's, I'm where God wants me to be. If I'm getting an opportunity like this to share my faith on the football park that I'm playing, you know, every Saturday, every second Saturday on. So that, a lot of, as I said, you've always got to make sure that if you see I'm following God or I'm trusting God or I'm following a call here, that this is God's call for your life. I mean, I went to Korea under a feeling that was a call. And I can't fully see the outworking of that at the moment. It's only 2 years ago I went out, and over a season I was there. But all the time I was there, I was trusting and obeying God. And that song, Trust and Obey, there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to, you know, trust and obey. That kept ringing in my head all the time at night when I was trying to get to sleep, lying in the players' quarters in Korea, in the middle of nowhere, wherever that was, away from my wife and family. But just kept hearing that verse over and over, just keep trusting me. And so you as well might be in a different situation, not in Korea or whatever, but you've made a situation and think, why is this happening? Why am I going through this situation? But if it's right, and all the green lights are on in other ways, and you've just to keep trusting and obeying God. And if God's in it, then the outcome, good or bad, worldly wise, is not the important thing. Currently, I'm in the police, working through some difficult things I'm doing just now, and not the job, I don't mean that, but just how, you know, it all works out for me personally at the moment. And I'm thinking, I've got my own situation to deal with, but I'm trusting God. And it'll always be the way, and I think it's always the way we've always got to be for each one of us. And if somebody can encourage somebody else by telling you, look, I'm finding it difficult, or I'm finding this, I've went through that before what you're going through just now, then that gives you encouragement. Because one of the things as Christians we've got to do is just encourage one another and a fellowship with one another to help keep each other going. Because there's a lot of times you just feel like giving up or giving in. But the one thing I would encourage, without getting to know any personal details from anybody here, is just to keep going. If you're in a position tonight where you feel, I've had enough, is just to keep going. Keep going. Don't give up. Don't give in. And that might be irrelevant to most of us, but maybe one person here tonight needs to hear that. Because God speaks through us all, speaks to you and speaks to me in different ways. So just keep going. Don't give in. Because the word I spoke yesterday was actually, it sounds like I'm busy, because I was down in Paisley yesterday speaking to it was men. And it was all about God's love. That was what the theme was yesterday. And that's what I thought about tonight, was to come and share about. And obviously the questions have not really brought that factor out, because I think that's an amazing thing as well to leave with you. I don't know if I've time later or if this is just, I don't know. Oh, I'm coming back, so I better just wait. I've got to say, because I can share that, the amazing thing about God's love for you and for me. It's just love, real love from God, which is just love humanly is almost just a four-letter word. It doesn't really mean much to a lot of people, but God's love is an amazing love. But I don't know the format, you see, tonight. So I've shared my testimony. I've shared some things that I hope has been a challenge or an encouragement more to you tonight. And thanks for listening.